Tonight, high drama over what really happened aboard Air Force One. A stunning report that the president in flight personally dictated his son's misleading statement about that meeting with a Russian lawyer. Did the misdirection go all the way to the top? Hot car tragedies. Two infants die on the same day, left in vehicles amid scorching temperatures.
She was my precious cargo, and I never thought it would happen to her.
Safety groups pushing car makers to sound the alarm. Microchipping employees, a device implanted under your skin that opens the door, works the vending machine, and more. We'll take you to a company where it's happening. Would you try it at yours? And baby bump, a little boy's airplane greeting we just can't get enough of. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
And a very good evening to our viewers in the West. We're glad you're here tonight. It's looking this evening like President Trump had a greater hand than first acknowledged in crafting son Donald Jr.'s initial misleading statement about his meeting last year with a Russian attorney. As you may recall, follow-up statements from the younger Trump revealed the meeting was really about gathering campaign dirt on Hillary Clinton. But the Washington Post is reporting it was the president himself who dictated his son's first response, which incorrectly claimed the meeting was about something much more innocent. And that's raising a host of questions tonight. Our Hallie Jackson has details.
Tonight, new questions of credibility and contradictions, with the White House defending the president for his response to that campaign-era meeting between Donald Trump Jr. and a Russian lawyer. The fallout focuses on what happened July 8th on Air Force One, not long after the president left the G20 summit in Germany. In the forward cabin, according to the Washington Post, President Trump huddling with longtime aide Hope Hicks, who acted as a go-between with his son, as the president, quote, personally dictated a statement in which Trump Jr. said that he and the Russian lawyer had primarily discussed a program about the adoption of Russian children. Turns out that was misleading, since emails released later showed the meeting was based on the promise of dirt against Hillary Clinton from a foreign adversary. 3 weeks ago, the president's lawyer sounded definitive.
The president was not involved in the drafting of the statement and did not issue the statement. The president wasn't involved in that.
Today, the White House says he actually was involved.
He certainly didn't dictate, but, you know, he, like I said, he weighed in, offered suggestion like any father would do.
The president's personal lawyer calls the Post report misinformed, inaccurate, and not pertinent. But the conflicting comments are raising questions about why the president got involved at all, what the special counsel will make of this, and whether the president's push to control the message is hurting him with his party.
If that's true, then that was a bad decision by the president, which will make us ask more questions. When you get caught in a lie about one thing, it makes it hard to just say, let the other stuff go.
Signs of a trust deficit, with the White House unconcerned.
Is this what is hurting the president's legislative agenda, this credibility issue on the
House? I think what's hurting the legislative agenda is Congress's inability to get things passed.
Now, Congress has passed a critical bill sanctioning Russia along with North Korea and Iran, but the president still hasn't signed it. The White House says he will after a review, but no word yet on the timeline. Lester?
Hallie Jackson at the White House. Thank you, Hallie. Now to new fallout from President Trump's recent message to police urging them not to be, quote, too nice when transporting suspects. He's now being directly contradicted by one of the nation's top law enforcement officials who told his agents to reject that presidential message, which the White House dismisses as a joke. NBC's Peter Alexander has details.
From the acting head of the Drug Enforcement Agency, a stunning rebuke of President Trump's recent remarks, appearing to encourage the roughing up of suspects by police.
When you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in, rough. I said, please don't be too nice.
The nation's top narcotics officer, Chuck Rosenberg, in this memo obtained by NBC News, telling his nearly 9,000 agents and staff worldwide to disregard the president's comments that condone police misconduct, instead reminding agents they must always act honorably by maintaining the very highest standards. Why weigh in? Because we have an obligation to speak out when something is wrong, Rosenberg writes. The White House unapologetic, dismissing the criticism.
It wasn't a directive, it was a joke. There's a very big difference.
But it's not a laughing matter in communities like Baltimore, where 25-year-old Freddie Gray died from his injuries in 2015 after a rough ride in the back of a police van. In Atlanta today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions promised to prosecute officers who use excessive force.
All it takes is for one bad officer to destroy the reputations of so many who work every day to build good relationships in these communities.
The president's off-the-cuff comments, police chiefs warn, detract from their legitimacy and trust in their communities.
We are not thugs. We are professionals.
Committed to upholding the law while they enforce it. Peter Alexander, NBC News, the White House.
This evening, the Senate has voted overwhelmingly to confirm Christopher Wray as the new director of the FBI. The vote was 92-5. Wray, a former Justice Department official under George W. Bush, takes over the bureau following President Trump's abrupt firing of James Comey, who was leading the investigation into possible connections between the Trump campaign and Russia during the 2016 election. As the crisis with North Korea escalates today, the Secretary of State made a dramatic move, offering the first direct talks with Kim Jong-un's regime and spoke about resetting relations with Russia, all in his very first State Department briefing since taking office. And our chief foreign affairs correspondent, Andrea Mitchell, was there.
6 months into the job, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson stepped into the briefing room for the first time, addressing crises from Russia to North Korea, with a new message for Kim Jong-un.
We are not your enemy. We're not your threat. But you are presenting an unacceptable threat to us, and we have to respond.
That response, both carrots and sticks. The U.S. planning to test fire a long-range missile from California tonight. But Tillerson today offering Pyongyang direct talks.
We would like to sit and have a dialogue with them.
On Russia, after Vladimir Putin's order to remove more than half of the U.S. embassy staff in Russia.
Told Foreign Minister Lavrov repeatedly, the situation's bad, but believe me, it can get worse. And it just did.
Complicating everything, Trump tweets, most recently blasting China for North Korea.
How complicated is it for you to do your job with sometimes the president, the commander-in-chief, contradicting U.S. foreign policy on Twitter?
In light of the fact that the president communicates the way he does, just like anything else, it's part of the environment in which we work. We'll adapt to it.
Underlying all this, rumors Tillerson might quit over disagreements with the president.
He calls me late at night on the weekends when something comes into his head and he wants to talk. But I think if we're not having those differences, I'm not sure I'm serving him. And so I would tell you the relationship between the president and myself is good.
Rejecting White House leaks blaming him for widespread State Department vacancies, Tillerson said the diplomats he speaks to say, help, help us fix this. That said, tomorrow he'll be meeting with congressional Republican leaders who blame him and his proposed budget cuts for a large part of the problem here. Lester?
All right. Andrea Mitchell, the State Department, thank you. Tonight, a pair of tragedies and soaring temperatures are prompting a renewed warning for moms and dads and a renewed push to force car makers to install alarms in back seats, alerting parents when children are left behind. It comes as temperatures reach dangerous triple-digit highs across much of the West. Our national correspondent, Miguel Almaguer, has a look at how this alarm system would work.
Tonight, as temperatures soar towards record highs, this stern warning from police. We will immediately smash your windows if a child or pet is left unattended in a hot car. Near Phoenix, two baby boys died in cars as temperatures soared over 100 degrees. 11 children nationwide killed in July after being left inside hot cars.
It was my baby. She was my precious cargo, and I never thought it would happen to her.
For Beth Brown, the pain from 10 years ago is still fresh today. Her husband accidentally left their daughter, Amber Lee, in the family car.
It doesn't matter your socioeconomic status. It doesn't matter your race. It doesn't matter your age. This is happening to everyone.
Brown and more than two dozen safety groups are now pushing new legislation in Congress that would require car makers to build an alarm system when a child is left in the back seat.
All we're asking is a little reminder for the most important thing you could ever put in your vehicle.
Some car makers like GM already offer warning systems. In this 2017 model, the driver gets a dashboard alert to check the rear seat, sensing someone may have been back there. With 29 children killed in hot cars this year alone, for some parents, new legislation comes too late. But for so many others, it could save a life. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
And as we begin to enter back to school time, two grieving parents in New Jersey are issuing a wake-up call about cyberbullying. Their 12-year-old daughter committed suicide in June after they say she was relentlessly harassed by classmates. Now they're ready to sue her school district, saying their pleas for the school to intervene and stop it were ignored. They spoke with our Stephanie Gosk.
Mallory Grossman's parents say the worst of the cyberbullying started last fall.
It got to the point where she didn't want to go to school, chronic headaches, stomach aches.
In June, the 12-year-old straight-A student who loved gymnastics committed suicide. Today, Diane and Seth Grossman announced they will sue the local New Jersey school district for not doing enough to stop it.
This small device can be a lethal weapon in the hands of the wrong child.
How was a cell phone used as a weapon against Mallory?
It humiliated her. It intimidated her. It made her feel alone.
The text messages escalated to the point where they actually said, "Why don't you kill yourself?"
The Grossmans say they turned to teachers, counselors, and the principal.
What was their response?
We're investigating it.
The school board issued a statement in June saying, in part, "We wish to send our deepest sympathies," adding that it is cooperating with an ongoing criminal investigation and cannot respond to inaccurate rumors and accusations. Mallory's case, just another example of something the whole country still struggles with. More than 50% of young people report being cyberbullied, 25% repeatedly. Girls more than boys. And it's mostly happening on Instagram and Snapchat. Some experts advise parents not to rely solely on school officials for help.
You bring as much information as possible to the authorities and you say, there's a pattern of behavior going on where my child cannot focus and they are scared.
The Grossmans want accountability.
We lived in this beautiful, pretty little glass home and someone took a baseball bat to it.
Hoping their family tragedy might help prevent another. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, Roseland, New Jersey.
And we turn now to a global hotspot that is spiraling deeper out of control as a strong man grabs nearly unlimited power in Venezuela and violence rages in the streets. Demonstrators are desperately trying to push back, the U.S. slapping sanctions on President Nicolas Maduro and keeping close watch on an oil-rich nation in chaos. We get more now from NBC's Kerry Sanders.
Tonight, Venezuela is a country in crisis after months of almost daily political unrest. Early this morning, state security swarmed the former mayor of Caracas's home. Shouts of dictator by his wife as the outspoken critic of Venezuela's president Nicolas Maduro was dragged away. Also grabbed under cover of darkness, opposition leader Leopoldo Lopez, who was released from jail almost a month ago. The Venezuelan Supreme Court saying both men violated their house arrests by criticizing the government on social media. Lopez recorded this video telling his wife, "Make it public if rearrested." He says, "I'm imprisoned for my ideas, imprisoned because I want a better Venezuela."
But the rearrest of opposition leaders last night is very alarming.
Sunday's controversial vote in Venezuela, seen as a move towards the consolidation of power in just one man, President Maduro.
No me intimidan.
The U.S. already targeting Maduro with financial sanctions, now threatening to limit some oil imports from the cash-strapped country. President Maduro, like his predecessor Hugo Chavez, blaming problems like poverty and crime in part on U.S. aggression. Tonight, Venezuela, a country with the largest oil reserves in the world, in economic and political chaos. Kerry Sanders, NBC News.
Back in this country, another new high today on Wall Street. The Dow closing at 21,963 at one point, coming within 10 points of 22,000. One of the key drivers on the Dow is Apple, which reported strong sales and earnings, sending the company's stock soaring to a new record after hours. There's a lot more to tell you about here tonight. It's like something out of a science fiction movie, why one company is offering employees microchip implants. Could your workplace be next, and how do you feel about that? Also, looking to lose weight? Why you may want to change your sleeping habits. We'll explain. Stay with us. We're back now with a story that's likely to create some conversation around your dinner table. We've had it certainly in the studio. Would you let your company microchip you? At first, it sounds like something you'd normally reserve for your dog, but it's new technology now being used in humans, and one company is getting national attention for implanting devices under the skin of employees, allowing them to leave their ID badges behind. NBC's Ron Mott has our story from River Falls, Wisconsin.
Todd Westby might just have a hand in shaping the future. The CEO of vending machine maker Three Square Market literally opening doors with automation that's turning some workers into high-tech machines of sorts.
This is a lot more than just some sort of novelty to you.
It is. It's reality. With all of the interest we've seen in it, I can tell this is definitely the future.
By injecting a rice-sized microchip into a willing employee's hand, all kinds of data can be programmed into them, from driver's licenses and medical ID cards to logging onto computers.
You have to hold it up to something such as this.
Even purchasing snacks in the company break room. More than 50 employees have volunteered.
How much did that hurt?
Didn't really hurt a lot.
A third holding off for now.
It kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Some experts suggest caution. Among the concerns, ID theft, health, and whether the chips can be tracked by GPS.
Most people don't really understand how this technology works, what data is collected, how it's stored, or who might be able to get access to it legally or illegally.
Three Square says their employees cannot be tracked by satellite. Melissa Timmons was skeptical, but is now chipped.
Yeah, right now it's only to buy a candy bar and get in our building, but there's a lot more that's going to be coming with it.
Chips off the new block.
I'll choose to pay with my hand here.
Cool and technology, once again, hand in hand. Ron Mott, NBC News, River Falls, Wisconsin.
So, would you go for it? Talk among yourselves. We'll take a break when we come back. A moment with something special, making a surprise comeback in the digital age. As the old saying goes, you snooze, you lose. But a new study suggests that might not be such a bad thing. Researchers say people who sleep an average of 6 hours a night have a waist size over an inch larger and weigh more than those who get 9 hours a night. Few hours of shut-eye could affect your hormones, your metabolism, and cholesterol level. Police in Maryland say they're flooded with calls offering donations after a photo of an officer buying diapers went viral. He wasn't buying them for his own family, but rather for a young mother who was cited for allegedly shoplifting diapers because she didn't have enough money. Police aren't releasing her name, but they are referring those who want to send donations to a nonprofit that helps low-income families. In this digital world of video games and mobile games, it might surprise you to hear that good old-fashioned board games are making a bit of a comeback, particularly strategy games like Monopoly or Risk, which are seeing a 21% jump in sales. So the next time the kids are restless, maybe you've already got the solution stacked somewhere in the hall closet. When we come back, caught on camera, why this tiny traveler is going viral. You don't want to miss this one. Finally tonight, after all the images we've seen of people behaving badly aboard airplanes, someone is finally going viral for being nice to his fellow passengers. NBC's Rahama Ellis has this little guy's story.
Of all the things a toddler could do on an airplane, two-year-old Guy Yakubovich chose to do this.
Who wants to fist bump you?
Let's do it.
His mom, Aaliyah, took cell phone video of them going to their seats on a Southwest flight from Kansas City, Missouri, heading home to Raleigh after visiting Grandma. Guy reached out to fist bump every passenger.
Say hi to everyone.
The warm response prompted Mom to write Instagram and Facebook posts that have since gone viral. Aaliyah says Guy learned how to fist bump about 6 months ago and hasn't stopped.
I think it's his way of connecting with people. You know, he's not a big hugger, he's not a big kisser, but a solid fist bump, he's more than confident to give that up.
It's a sharp contrast to those other disturbing airline videos. You know the ones that have gone viral and made all of us wonder, what in the world is going on? But now there's this. There is something special about a kid's fist bump. When the Bruins' championship hopes were on thin ice, the image of a young cancer survivor fist bumping the team became an online sensation.
Gotta reach up high for me. All right.
Now, a little boy lifting the spirits of a plane full of weary travelers and yay, all of the rest of us going along for the ride. Rahima Ellis, NBC News, New York.
All right. No way you could have a bad flight after that. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Tuesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and have a good night.